Welcome to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, and I'm glad to have you. Glad you could make it out tonight. I wanted to give a few announcements before we get started. First, I wanted to let you know about these Sunday tours. I think I've mentioned them most weeks. They've been really incredible. It's a 1 o'clock tour on Sundays. It's either of the special exhibition, the architecture, or something from the permanent collection, and they're free with the cost of admission. This Sunday will be the first Sunday of the month, so it will be free for everybody. And this Sunday we have Jeremy Strick. He is the director of the Nasher Sculpture Center, and he will be here to give us insights into Ed Ruscha Road Tested, which, of course, is a special exhibition. So I invite you back. I also want to let you know that if you've seen some that you missed and you have great regret, I can't give you the full experience, but we do have the audio podcast of those. So go online and find those as well. Next Tuesday, we have the artist Kristen Morgan here. Her work was, among other things, was featured in Unmonumental, the object in the 21st century, which some of you know is the critically acclaimed and very, very much discussed opening exhibition of the new museum in 2007. She's had quite a bit of success. That's one of the things that I thought would stand out, but I encourage you also to get online and see what you can find out about Kristen between now and next week and make plans to be back. Tonight we have with us Sterling Allen, who in addition to being an accomplished artist is one of the co-founders of the alternative gallery OK Mountain in Austin. It's a move that I believe grew out of a shared experience among the OK Mountain founders under the instruction of Mel Ziegler in the sculpture department at the University of Texas, where Sterling received his BFA in 2003. And if I have that story wrong, I hope that Sterling will correct it tonight. Sterling has an insatiable appetite for making art, which along with talent and intellect has contributed greatly to his early success and recognition, including selection for numerous and very impressive artist residencies in New York, Vermont, and Nebraska, as well as the coveted Art Pace Artist in Residence, which he was chosen for in 2009, and most recently the International Artist Residency in Argentina in Buenos Aires that he participated in this past year. Solo exhibitions include the 2009 Housing Edition exhibition, which was the culmination of the Art Pace residency and is the subject of Sterling's exhibition opening this Friday, March 4th, at the Fort Worth Contemporary of TCU. Invite you all to come out for that as well. In 2005, Sterling was included in 22 to Watch, New Art in Austin at the Austin Museum of Art, and then other group exhibitions have included Nexus Texas at the CAM, the Contemporary Art Museum of Houston, in 2007. It's going to be Re-Everything at Paragraph Gallery in Kansas City in 2008, Palace Does Dallas at Road Agent in 2010, which is a great title. Modern Art, Modern Lives at the Austin Museum of Art, also in 2010. And upcoming in 2011, the exhibition The Gun and Knife Show at Central Track in Dallas. Recent exhibitions featuring or including OK Mountain are Benefit Plate at Freight and Volume Gallery in New York, Prospect 1.5 at the Arthur Roger Gallery in New Orleans, and New Works, OK Mountain, at the Austin Museum of Art. And then upcoming, the collective will be part of New Image Sculpture at the McNay Art Museum in San Antonio. And as I understand it, there's something in the works at the Blafford Art Museum in Houston as well for OK Mountain. Again, maybe Sterling can clear that up if I'm mistaken. So it's apparent that Sterling is a very busy artist, and I have to say I truly appreciate him taking time out of his installations, the busy installation schedule for the show at the Fort Worth Contemporary, to be here tonight for Tuesday evening. So without further delay, please join me in welcoming Sterling Allen.
Well, I would like to thank the Fort Worth Modern for having me, as well as Christina and TCU for having me this Friday, and then publicly thank ArtPace in San Antonio, who's the organization that commissioned the project that I'm showing at TCU that I'll be speaking about majority of this evening. Before I get in, I guess I'm going to talk about the housing addition project at ArtPace, which is largely sculptural, and I consider myself mostly a sculptor these days, but it did not start out that way. This is an image of a show that I had in Houston at the Inman Gallery Annex that was in May of 2010, and all these works were based on stuff I saw in Buenos Aires at the little residency. I was there for a couple weeks. So I'm not going to talk about any new work. I just wanted to show you guys a couple images of some things that I'm doing fairly recently. So here's one, and then these are some pieces that were in a group show in Dallas that was at Marty Walker Gallery, curated by Billy Zinser. So these funny little wooden sculpture things. So these are some newer things. Hopefully by the end of it, some of the things that are happening here will make a little more sense after seeing the housing addition project, which was really, an important step for me, both in scale and scope. And as Terry mentioned, I work with OK Mountain, and just to give you guys a brief bit about that, it's something that, for better or for worse, eats up a huge portion of my life these days. But it was a gallery space that 8 artists started in 2006, with the idea just to show work from across Texas, across the U.S. and global that we didn't feel like we were getting in Austin. So we run it like a commercial space, and we exhibit artists. And in 2008, we started working as a collaborative, just sort of out of happenstance. We made collaborative drawings at our meetings every week, and we're all artists, and so we would just sit around making these doodles. And we're invited to do, an exhibition, and that's kind of snowballed to where, at this point, it's in rivalry with our curatorial practice. So this is an image from a show that OK Mountain Collective has up at the Blaffer Art Museum now in Houston. There's 4 large sculptures in a video. So these are works that the group makes together. There's one image. This is another image of the piece we did for the McNay, and this is kind of an in-progress studio shot. For this show, it was called New Image Sculpture, and the idea behind it is a survey of artists that are making everyday objects with art materials or paper, cardboard, or clay, things like that, but that reference commercial products and chips and clothing. And so our piece for the show was a hybrid workout torture machine. And sort of like the McNay Museum has this really great Spanish colonial wing. And so we wanted a piece that was somewhat site-specific in their contemporary wing, bringing in the Spanish Inquisition feel into the contemporary wing. And then, we just thought it was a really funny idea thinking about torture and workout at the same time and how similar they are. It just depends kind of on who's in control there. But if you guys are in San Antonio or if you're in Houston, I encourage you to see the exhibitions. This is a group show, and it's really great. And the show at the Blaffer also has a solo show by another artist downstairs. So I bring that up just because I feel like OK Mountain has been, like I said, a lot of what I spend my time on these days. And it's keeping me out of my own studio somewhat, but I've also learned an incredible amount from my collaborators and have met hundreds of artists that have, shown me all kinds of tricks and introduced me to new ideas. So it's relevant in that sense. So I'll take you guys back to 2007, and these were some of the first sculptures that I had made since undergraduate at UT, which was a pitiful experience. I had like a beginning sculpture class and made very much beginning sculpture artwork and, stuff out of steel, and I had no idea. I thought making a sculpture had to do with marble and bronze, and really kind of had my mind blown by, an art history professor and a sculpture professor that just opened the doors to what, in my opinion, sculpture became like idea class, and you could just make anything in sculpture. You could make a performance, and you could make a series of drawings, but the dialogue that happens within a sculpture environment, I think, is kind of like why I still call myself a sculptor. So this is a series that is called the ABC Project, and there's 26 sculptures, and they all stand in for a letter of the alphabet. I wanted to explain briefly like the process behind these, because they look really crazy, but they come from a very sort of rule-based, almost mathematical sort of beginning. So I wrote down, I was at a residency in Nebraska, or in Vermont. It was very cold, and I couldn't go outside. Was kind of going a little bit nuts after being by myself for weeks at a time, and was trying all kinds of different things. I was mostly making drawings at the time, and I wrote down just quickly off the top of my head my word associations with every letter of the alphabet. And as you can see, like corner is standing for K. It's just spelled wrong, and I don't even really know what tut means, but it was just whatever came out of my head as fast as possible. So I had this list, and it was kind of one of these, I guess, these rules or these sort of games that I was playing and enjoy playing to sort of get myself moving somehow and set up kind of a parameter or a structure just to kind of play. And so just having these words was the beginning. And so then for each word, I created a drawing. So this is boat. And so you can see in the top left corner, I did sort of a really crude clip art version of a boat. And then the drawing manifests in that I start drawing. So the boat in the top left is the beginning. The one to the right of it is a copy. The one to the right of that is a copy. To the right of that is a copy. And you get to the end of the page, and then you move down, and the bottom one is a copy of the top one, and then you move left. And so it's just sort of seeing how my hands naturally, you know, characterize line work, and I'm being as accurate as possible, but also just the human nature of a hand and the motor skills tend to sort of pull these things out of proportion. So between any two phases, you can barely tell a difference, but when stretched out over 26 or 30 or 20 phases, these lines take new forms. So this was really exciting for me. I thought this was a way for me to get abstract and shake things up and make really trippy looking imagery without, you know, dropping acid or whatever. This is like a way to just end up with these really abstract marks, and it all came in like a very anal process, which is really something I abide by. And so these are very exciting, seeing these things morph in such a way. So I made one for each letter. So this is the boat drawing flipped upside down. So the next step in these was to kind of look at this drawing from all angles and just hunt for an image that popped out of my head. And so for this drawing, it was this image, which is totally insane. And, you know, it was a way to sort of connect these crazy lines and make something concrete out of it, even if it's in a really crude sort of schematic. Did everyone follow what I'm saying with that? So I was playing with these lines and just looking, sort of letting my eyes cross in front of me and trying to just pull anything out. Like when you look at the clouds and you're like, oh, that looks like Garfield, or, you know, that looks like a baseball bat or whatever. And then trying to solidify it in a series of marks. So that's step two of the ABC drawings. And then step three was to make a sculpture that used the initial drawing as kind of a blueprint. So I would take these, this is a little book that I made. And so for letter B, I had a couple different options, and I ended up choosing the one on the top left. But I would take this little Xerox book with me. It's a Xerox out of my sketchbook to Goodwill and just sort of go piece by piece and start with this kind of C-shaped mouth and look for something as a stand-in for this mouth. And maybe it ended up being this fuzzy arm off of a monkey or something. But it could have been any number of things. And it was just sort of what I happened to come across, which also is something that I've increasingly found myself drawn to, is this like chance and finding things that are already out in the world, be it in Google or in the street or in the thrift store, just sort of taking what comes to you. So this is the drawing for Apple. This is car. This is dog. And some are more than others. And I had I worked in high school as a caricature artist at a theme park. And I think it was really, really significant in physically training my hand to draw in a certain way, to where when the pencil touches the paper, I make one mark, and that's kind of it. I try really hard never to erase or anything, and that's due to the fact that when you put a marker on a sheet of paper at a theme park, it starts bleeding immediately, and you're drawing like this family, and you can't start over, and so it's like quite a bit of pressure. I was 16 years old trying to make these drawings and be like a entertainer, and I think it really affected the way that my motor skills are. You can't start over, all these kind of things that are quite a bit of pressure, but I'm really happy that I had that experience. It just has sort of given me this stylistic thing that I can't quite shake. This is elephant. This is fish. Goat. And then I just put six of them larger so you could see them. This is the apple. And there, this is the boat again. This is the car. So I was just hunting. I think it's a laptop bag and a little speak and spell or something, a hockey stick. And this was really my first attempt at sculpture in a serious way, as serious as you could get with these. I had a real idea, and I was trying to make that idea manifest in a sculptural way. Whereas in school, I was given three projects as a sculpture student and had a really hard time kind of making my mind fit with, the sculpture medium. But with these, it was just really, it was amazing just feeling like I had control of these materials and I could make my idea be a sculpture. This is, this is D. So he's got press-on nails and a caulk coming out of the leg. This is E. And they're very anthropomorphic, and they use all kinds of kids' toys, and I think that helps with the alphabet. This is F. And this is G. That's the IKEA pillow, if any of you guys have seen that one. The heart. So I was filling these things with foam, and this is H. So while making these, I discovered that I have a very haphazard way of building. And this is a rear view of one of those sculptures. I think this is letter O. And it was kind of like I didn't understand these materials. I understood graphite. I understood Prismacolor. And very little else when I finished college. Like I'd done some printmaking and done some things like that. But I understood, photography and film. But sculpture was so brand new, I didn't understand how to use the materials. And I wanted to see these drawings turn into objects as, quick as possible, without relying on any carpentry skills whatsoever. And so these were the kind of things that I came up with. This is holding a sculpture up. It's like a trophy bottom because it's heavy, and then some wood, and you can see awful glue dripping down it. And this was like one shot, and I messed up and just kept it. But there's drywall screws were like my best friend. Some zip ties. So kind of like what a sculpture professor might like vomit if they saw. This is kind of being almost the worst, just like really not having an idea about how to make this thing work. So I put a dowel in there and L brackets of different sizes and screws and glues, and the glue is eating the styrofoam. And but these are the backs of those sculptures. This one has sewing pins in it to hold that rubber nose on, because I couldn't slow down enough to figure out a glue that would attach to latex. So it was all these ways of just kind of like improvising and coming up with any solution I could to get these things finished. So that was 2007. So kind of, I started seeing these things and still see them every day is people's everyday solutions to these kind of problems. And so going around and seeing that maybe someone doesn't have all the materials, whether it's because it's about to get dark and you need to finish, or because you don't have the money for it, or for whatever reason, people making very creative solutions with very little. And the sculptural qualities that these kind of constructions took on were just like mind-blowing. This is just kind of probably one afternoon walking around. So I have like... I'm still to this day taking pictures of stuff like this. And I think some of this kind of informed the work that was from Argentina and some of the new things as well. But I was sort of seeing this as the same process that I was kind of going through, like not knowing how to build, not having any carpentry background, and just sort of winging it and using all kinds of connectors and clamps and different pieces of wood. And then some of the solutions are actually, like, you know, pretty smart. It may be inexpensive, but there's like an ingenuity that, you know, some might call it like dumb or whatever, but I think it's so smart, and it's like, I can't like erase my art background and sort of think in a way like this, but if I could, I wish I could at times, because I think these are some of the smartest, you know, ingenious solutions that someone can make. And this kind of goes into another part of just like a DIY. Like, you know, this guy was trying to sell this bat on eBay and didn't have a velvet drop cloth or a studio, so just like put a tarp. And, you know, it kind of does the trick, but it's like, I could never do this. Like, I would spend the money, or I would, you know, build the thing or try to sew it, because I can't turn the aesthetics off. And it's kind of like when you try to draw like a child, you can't do it. And so this kind of stuff that's out there in the real world, where people have sort of, they're not thinking about art like artists do all day long. They're just trying to get a problem solved. I think ends up making some of the most beautiful solutions. Just making your own speaker cabinets. There's hundreds of examples, but this is like a Halloween costume. But there's something really awesome about a person sitting down and making with their hands this box that, if they were, you know, an artist, it would be thought of as one way. But if they're just like a parent, you know, it's not seen as such. But I feel like materials have kind of reconciled with the public, and everyone has, you know, access to all the materials now, and contemporary art's being made out of everything, as it has been. And so it's awesome to see these sort of worlds collide. This I don't even really have to say, but you know, it's like, it's funny, and but it's awesome at the same time to see that kind of stuff. So this is something that's been kind of an undercurrent that we'll go on to. It'll make sense, hopefully. And then another, you know, this is kind of a more extreme version of that that thought process, and that, like, I don't know, like ingenuity and resourcefulness is like a shanty town. And just having, if you have a leak in your roof and you have to fix it, and you either don't have the materials or can't afford the materials, there's something that's got to be done. And these are more survivalist, but there's still a, I don't know, there's an engineering to them that's really, really exciting. Just using whatever you have at your disposal, and it really limits you to what, it just turns your mind. If you can go to the hardware store and buy a new roof, you know, that's great. But being able to come up with a solution, like, engages the brain so much more. As an artist, I feel like I would prefer to put myself in a situation where I'm limited, and try to, you know, use things that maybe wouldn't normally be used in this situation to fulfill the need. So this stuff is as depressing as it is, it's an inspiration for me as well. And you'll see in the housing addition project, kind of, it's very clear that I was kind of looking at some stuff like this too. So again, back to the way I was constructing things, quite poorly. I began to think about what would happen if I tried to make three of these same object. So, like, for this piece, I just had to make that branch stick once, and then the piece was finished. But if I had that same situation and I wanted to make three identical copies to the best of my ability using these sort of cheap everyday materials, what would be, you know, the outcome of that, and how good am I with my hand, and how accurate am I in this, like, crazy storm of building? Trying to look at that in the same way that when you look at those drawings, the ABC drawings, between any two, there's very little difference. But if you sort of stretch that thing out, you can see wild variations. I was hoping to really hit my mark with these things and just see, like, how close I could actually get within reason. You know, I'm not going to use a laser. I'm not going to use a ruler to measure where these holes go, but just sort of using my human hand and eye to put these objects together. And then kind of also letting the materials, you know, for better or for worse, do their work. So cheap goods you get at the dollar store, the plastics are different colors oftentimes. Or if you buy used materials, there's a chip off of one side of them, or they have their own uniqueness. And so like trying to let them shine by the comparison to one another was where I was thinking about this piece. This is just a few months before I did the residency in San Antonio, where I made the housing project. So this was kind of a sketch for, in my mind, what I wanted to try to take a shot at in San Antonio. And another thing that was completely in my thoughts while I was sort of conjuring up this project, and ArtPace, if you're not familiar, is two-month residency. You're there with a Texas artist, a national artist, and an international artist. And so I was there representing Texas, and it's selected by an international curator who's like really fancy, and it's a wonderful place, and there's like a nice budget, and there's a catalog, and it's like quite a bit of pressure to produce. So oftentimes at a residency, you know, you have a month in residence and you sort of watch movies, or you make drawings, or you do laundry, or you read books, or, you know, you make something grand, but you, at the end of it, you just go home. But at ArtPace and some others like it, you're required to produce an exhibition. So it took a little bit more forethought, whereas before I would kind of just show up with some materials and try to, just get inside my head for a while. At ArtPace, I wanted to show up with a plan because you have 2 months to make whatever you're going to make. And then your studio is literally turned into the exhibition space. You clean out your materials, and then the fruits of your labor for 2 months stand there. So another thing I was thinking quite a bit about was this Rauschenberg piece, Factum 1 and Factum 2, that I believe he made in 62. And he just talks about how this piece, you know, was a way just to comment on abstract expressionism, and that the idea that this artist is like a reckless improviser. And so he is making these really sort of abstract expressionist marks and these drips and things, but he's copying himself in a way to sort of knock it down at the knees and show his own hand. And I just think that, like, you know, this is 60 years old, and it's extremely relevant and always has been one of my favorite. He's an artist I really appreciate, and this is, you know, the piece for me of his. And being a Texas artist, I appreciate that. So this is another thing that I was thinking quite a bit about and was inspiring to me for the housing edition project. So this is kind of my typed out little sheet of paper that I showed up to ArtPace with. And this is what I wanted to make. I thought about, like, the joke housing edition popped into my head. As like you add on to your house, the housing addition that I'm thinking about is a sculptural addition with an E. So E-D-I-T-I-O-N? I don't know. That addition is the one I'm talking about. And just kind of that little slip of words, it was as simple as that is why I went with the house. And so the thought was I'm gonna make these houses and try and make them the same. And it would be kind of like my largest project in size to date. So I was going after kind of a child's playhouse size. So before I left for San Antonio, I started gathering materials in groups of three. And this was kind of the first day I went out. And I had an idea for all these objects I was going to use in materials to be stand-ins for stuff that you would see on a house. So I made this big list of mailbox and doorbell and welcome mat and weather vane and all these things. And shingles was one of them. And I thought videotapes would be really funny for shingles. So I was like, I got to get all these videotapes, and I have to get three exact sets. But as you can see, you know, there's stickers on them. Some of them are written on. Some of them are older. Some of them are bleached. And so getting this little group together in my studio before I left was like electricity, because I could see, you know, when you just pick up one cassette in the store, it is what it is. But when you you know, combine it with these other two that are identical, it becomes so unique. And so seeing how unique these things became when in comparison to their partners, I could just sort of project this in my head as happening with all kinds of materials. And it was pretty exciting. So this is some of the first stuff I bought in my studio in Austin before I left for San Antonio. And then when I got to San Antonio, I found out the best way to collect materials was in the trash. So I found the City of San Antonio's waste disposal PDFs about where your large trash day is. And so I would just, every Monday, I would print out that sheet and just get in my car and drive to those neighborhoods and just start digging through people's, you know, credenzas and desk drawers and weight benches and lamps and like all kinds of crazy stuff in order to try to find either a piece that could be cut into three equal parts or, for example, like three dresser drawers that were all the same from the same unit and would yield like that trio. And so my car would get full and I'd have to pull over it at like an abandoned parking lot and break all the drawers down. So I just kept the faces and then throw all this garbage back into my car so I wouldn't get in trouble. And I was strapping things and just going through people's stuff. A lot of times people go to these, you see them in the neighborhoods and they're going to get things to salvage for themselves to actually use or to sell. And I was going after like the bottoms of the barrel and stuff that, you know, there, I would see the same drivers around as I was in a neighborhood. Like, these guys have been driving this green truck. These guys are in like a red Jeep, and we'd sort of be roving around and they'd be going after the nice stuff. And I'd be digging for this really broken down piece of something. So I'm sure they thought I was bananas. But, so that was a huge part of this, was driving around the city collecting materials. And it was something that I kind of wanted to do, not by being stubborn or anything, but I wanted to do this by myself. And I felt like sending an intern, you're given an amazing amount of support at ArtPace. Sending an intern out to go dig through stuff in people's yards or was just not something I was interested in. And so I spent quite a bit of time. I saw the whole city, which is where I grew up, but I stayed very in one place when I was growing up there, but I saw the entire city finally for the first time, which was kind of a afterthought, but it was quite nice kind of knowing every neighborhood in the city. So then I would bring them back to the studio and sort of process them, find stuff that fit with one another or three equal lengths of PVC or, you know, if a drawer was completely shattered, I couldn't use it and I would throw out the other two. And I started collecting these piles of records and just anything that I could find three of and just stockpiling it in the studio to where it was just filling up and filling up and filling up with stuff. And I bought very little new besides hardware and lumber because I was, again, really interested in seeing these kind of really unique differences between materials. So the stuff just began to stack up. And this is kind of an early test for how I saw the roof going. And, you know, I really didn't have a plan. And I unpacked the work today at TCU, and it's been 2 years since the exhibition opened. And I felt like I was really on top of it building-wise. But, you know, going back and looking at it, I was still really just, like, searching for how to build things. So it's interesting to see kind of, like, not even knowing the angle that the pitch that a roof would have, and just sort of sitting in my studio with this piece of foam trying to guess, like, I don't know how a roof would look. Maybe it's like this, or maybe it's like this. It was still really inquisitive and kind of fun. And I was doing it by myself again without, you know, any advice or, which might've been better, but, that's kind of how I went about it. This is kind of towards the end of the installation. So oftentimes, you know, an artist will come into this place and, visit 6 months beforehand and create an idea in their head and then maybe deliver their plans to the staff. And then the project is produced by the staff using the budget allotted. And then the artist flies in, for the opening and, you know, there's the photographs are there and there's a reception and, you know, it's really exciting. But for me, I moved out of, you know, out of Austin and I didn't come home but once. And, I worked like day and night kind of building this thing. And so my studio is just this absolute crazy person's place where there's the staff would leave on a Friday and I would go out trash digging all weekend long and bring in all kinds of, you know, crazy things. And it was really like, I didn't really have a chance to kind of stop and think about it, but I was just working kind of nonstop. So this is sort of where it looked at the end, or close to the end. And this is how the pieces kind of finished up. So, like I said, I went back and thought about satellite dish, weather vane, wind chime, doorbell, knocker, all that stuff, and then went about creating them out of these scavenged materials as equally as I could, including, you know, the videotapes on the rooftop are an exact collection. There's like an identical grouping on each house. And I was pretty true with it and did the best that I could, but it was a project that going into it, I knew it was going to fail. Like there's no way that someone, even with the staff, can use a bunch of rotted things and old materials and create a true sculptural addition on the scope of someone like Jeff Koons or, you know, Urs Fischer, who's making these objects that have fabrication teams. And even at that level, I'm sure there's inconsistencies, but part of what was cool to me is to think about like one man's attempt to make a sculptural addition and like really give it a real effort. And all the while kind of knowing that even the materials inherently would cause me to like be inaccurate. And I don't know, there was just something, I thought it was funny and I thought it was a worthwhile goal. So I think that came through. Like I can't tell the three apart, but there's definitely differences. This is an installation shot. So there's power running from the wall that connects all of them. And I think as I was doing this, you know, people would ask me if this is about the housing crisis and foreclosures and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't, but it was interesting to think about, you know, my ideas about what a house is and kind of my clip art version and stereotypical version of what a house is might be totally different from someone in Tunisia or someone in, you know, even Chicago. And so that, like my own ideas about that kind of stuff came out, and sort of suburban housing that's, you know, the houses are pinned fairly close together and they kind of, it's something I think is very Texas in some neighborhoods. So without even knowing, I felt like, you know, I was kind of subconsciously commenting on at least my idea of what housing and houses are. So I was fine with that kind of read on it, although it wasn't really intentional. It was much more kind of experimental and lighthearted, but it happened in 2009, so it was kind of right in the middle of all that mess. This is the roof. So the rooster there is, it's like a crow that you would buy at Oshman's or Academy, and it's got a fake flower on its head and then a dart in its neck, like a little plastic dart, and it's sitting on a PVC and a little, you can't see it very well, but a little coconut cup for a toddler and then some kitchen utensils. And so it was still like I was having quite a bit of fun kind of figuring out how to produce these objects and make them fit into, you know, a drawing of them or the idea of them. The satellite dish is like an LP and then a Frisbee on top of that, and then a deck of cards on the outside, and it's got a little click light on the other side. This is the mailbox, which is two record covers, a boot, and a spatula, and a bedpost. So, you know, for these boots, I had to find two pairs of the boots because I had to have three. So I was like the maniac buying, I don't know, all kinds of crazy children's toys and 32 of the same Austin Powers VHS at the Goodwill store, and like probably totally weirding out the clerks on a daily basis. This is the air conditioning unit. So these are like Christmas beads and pencils and a crate like you would get at Eckerd's or something. I worked at Eckerd's as a film or in the photo lab for like 4 years, which is the other kind of career that I had. So I unpacked quite a few of these. So it was stuff that you would find on a playhouse, but also find on like maybe a suburban home. You wouldn't have an air conditioning unit on a playhouse or anyone that I have ever been in, but you would find these kind of items on a house as well. So it's kind of mixing those two. This is the electrical meter, which is like an old VHS tape box, and some Tupperware and keychain and some PVC. And then for people that go to thrift stores, like the thrift store record of all time, which I feel like I would find constantly. So I want to include that. This is like the little pulley system that kids would have in their yard with a belt and climbing rope. So you can still see L brackets and stuff like that. Like I was still, that was, I'm finally feeling like I'm able to overcome, and mostly because of OK Mountain building projects, my like need to go back to L brackets and things like that in order to construct something that'll hold together. And it kind of makes me nervous because I really like these sort of dumb solutions to stuff, and not knowing how to maybe connect a piece of wood to a bicycle wheel and having to use another piece of wood, and then how do you connect to that one, and then you have to drill this thing here, instead of how maybe someone that knows how to build would just start at square one and create a plan. I would just start drilling things together and cutting them. And so I'm a bit concerned that the more you practice at something, I'm gonna lose a little bit of the joy of these kind of dumb mistakes. This is a like a bolt to hold the door closed with a lighter doorbell. So I found three broken lighters that were all blue. Found a lot more lighters that weren't blue, but I found three blue ones. And there's how the power runs. So then the other thing that was creeping into my head as I was doing this project was kind of how I was working in a very much like an assembly line. And so I would pull out, you know, these three tennis shoes and systematically cut the sole off the first one, and then cut the sole off the second one, and then cut the sole off the first one, and then put some glue on this one, glue on this one, and glue on this one, and then put a dowel in it, and dowel in it, and dowel in it, and it felt really like an assembly line. And so I was started, you know, as people do, just like, well, what is assembly lines? What are those all about? And, you know, started researching that kind of thing, and then sort of dawned on the idea of, like, painting in such a way. And of course, like Thomas Kincaid was the first to come to mind, and you know, I feel like he's taken a lot of heat from people, and some of it justifiably, most of it. But I think he's like a man making a living, and using him was not an attempt to sort of continually smash Thomas Kincaid, because I feel like he's had his fair share. It was really to like look at what his process is and like how that could relate to the process that I was going through building these sculptures. So to my knowledge, he makes a painting, and then he has a master apprentice who takes a print of the painting and then artfully adds actual paint to it. And the print sells for like 10 times the price of the painting, I should say, sells for 10 times the price of just a normal print. So he's got these master painters. I'm not sure if that fellow is one of them, but that are adding those dots and stuff to his paintings. And he's a very skilled painter, as a set painter and a matte painter. He's a good businessman, but he's got a really interesting business model as far as art goes. He's one of the richest artists in the United States. So thinking about Thomas Kincaid, I started doing some research on these villages in China that almost the entire village is just made up of communities of people and shops that are making paintings for the Western world and elsewhere. And oftentimes they're copying masters. You can get a Van Gogh, you can get a Manet, you can get a Kandinsky, you can get all kinds of paintings, or you can send them a JPEG and they will make you a painting. And this is by no means a new thing. Like, there's a lot of artists that have utilized this service for conceptual or financial reasons. But it seemed to me like absolutely perfect. Thinking about, you know, this guy that has this wave of an army of master painters, and then, you know, in China there's these studios filled with people making paintings. So my idea was to take Thomas Kincaid's painting, which is called Stillwater Cottage, which is this painting, and I photographed my one of my houses. So the exhibition opened in mid-March, and I had to allow time to utilize this service in China, so I had to photograph a house well in advance of the opening, which kind of put me on even more of a time crunch. But I got a photograph of one of the edges of the houses and photoshopped it into the painting, and then sent this JPEG to China. And then my only concession was that I asked that an individual artist take their shot, three individual artists take their shot at the same JPEG, rather than having the same artist sit through three copies. I was just really interested to see how three people might attack this fairly small size JPEG that is like, you can't see the details. And it was just like kind of my nightmare job to think about, you know, having my two friends sitting next to me, we're all trying to make the same painting from this grubby JPEG, and you know, how's he doing it? Is his more true? And it just seemed like a really crazy predicament. But so I sent them this image, and then these are the images I got back. So you can see there's like very subtle differences in the way they handle the trees, and how many, you can see in the bottom right corner, there's two stones and a goose. And I think in one of these, it turns into a third goose or a group of geese maybe. But things disappear and they kind of come in and out, and there's like this inability to sort of nail it, but they all took a different approach at it. So I just, this is a piece, the triptych is called Stillwater Shanty, based on the shanty towns. And these are oil on canvas, like 2 by 3 feet. And then I found, they came unstretched 10 days later, which is miraculous. They still smelled like oil paint, they were still wet. And so I unrolled them and then stretched them and found some nice frames to put them in at Garden Ridge or something. There's even stuff like, it's, I don't know how well you guys can see it, but even the mailbox, you know, like how people were attacking that. It's kind of awesome. So that was, so this is like the installation that was at Art Pace. It was the three houses and a power line in the back that supplied power to them. And then the three paintings, which are kind of there to mimic, you know, my attempt at this perfect sculptural addition, and then, you know, a totally separate group of people's attempt at mimicking this thing, which is impossible on both accounts. So I think that's all I have for images and stuff. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, or I wanted to keep it short and sweet for everyone.
Have you had any conversation with Kincaid or his attorneys?
No, I thought about that, and it could have been potentially like a great thing for me if he had. I'm kind of glad he didn't, because like I said, the goal was not really to, I don't know, make him look terrible. It was just to kind of like investigate how he makes his living and how it applied to my work. But no, I haven't. I'm curious, though. You know, you never know. I'm sure he's sued many people before, which is crazy, but I'm sure it's happened. Anybody else?
You've mentioned power several times. What exactly was run by the electricity?
Okay, sorry.
And also, what was the interior of the houses like?
Yeah, So the electrical cable ran to the interior, and they had basically it was just kind of a ceiling fan, a four-sided ceiling fan that I made out of a Kool-Aid pitcher and kind of like an old plastic tire. And it's, when I unpacked it today, I realized like, wow, this is crazy, because it's held together with bungees, and but it's got a fluorescent light in it, and those are powered inside each one that kind of give it, you can see a bit of a glow inside that second house. Because it's raw MDF or OSB, and it kind of gives it that real sort of warm glow that you would see in the paintings. So the interior is very raw. I mean, it looks like you would walk into a house that's being framed. You just see studs, and there's a little detail. I'm going to go off track of this slideshow just for a second because I don't have it. You'll see it if you come to TCU, but there's a little rug on the inside of the house that's just red carpet. I found a big chunk of red carpet, and I glued some poker chips to it in homage to this little, there's a tiny little scrap of red fabric, red and white polka dotted fabric where my mouse is. And so there's just like a doormat. But other than that, they're really raw. And at Art Pace, they had an electrical cable spool, you know, the kind that are about this big that people use as tables in tree houses all the time. Treehouse stuff was another big inspiration. So like the dad that wants to really build the treehouse, but he is a software engineer, or the mom that's like a first grade teacher, but they want to do it. And so just getting up there and putting 500 nails into things and trying to make it stick was sort of how I saw myself as a sculptor. So the treehouse aesthetic, and people use those little spools a lot. So it had a little table and a little doormat.
Is the bed actually turned?
No. No.
Do you enjoy the differences in the three houses where you try to make them all the same, but they're obviously not quite the same? Do you kind of enjoy or regret the differences in them?
I think I really like them, you know, because if it was obvious to the naked eye that one of those boards was green instead of blue, or if there's like a major flaw, I think it would annoy that side of me. But knowing that it was kind of out of my hands in a way, knowing that these materials were left outside, or that they had been written on by a kid in their dresser, like I kind of just love the fact that it makes you look at them a bit longer, perhaps, and like try to. I don't know if anyone's as ambitious as to run around trying to find differences, but you know, it's like those picture books where someone's got an apple over their head and the other one doesn't. And like seeing they look very similar, but you know, you look closer at them because there's a comparison. So I kind of like that.
Have you got, because I was thinking when you showed the drawings at the beginning of the alphabet, where each one kind of deliberately took one, well, not deliberately, but they, you know, there's a sort of transition. Is that something that you've acted out in sculpture yet?
I haven't, and I think that, you know, I've thought about, like, that kind of transition between mediums. So going from, you know, what happens when you take a drawing and you make a sculpture out of it, and then you make a painting out of that, it flattens that sculpture, and it becomes maybe potentially more graphic, and so now it's got this new body, but it's all based on this, you know, the same image. So kind of that, I haven't really attempted to do it, you know, going from sculpture to sculpture, but definitely, like, the second part to that ABC project that I don't have images of on me was to take that alphabet and then spell a word with this new font. So you had wax was the sculpture for W, A, and X, and I took all the components apart on the computer and then sort of like magnetically put them all back together in a crazy way and then made a painting of that, and that sort of stood in for that letter. So there was these six paintings that were the six words, and it's a pangram, which is using every letter of the alphabet in a sentence. So like the lazy fox jumps over the river, whatever. It's a way that font companies use to display their fonts. So like taking those sculptures, it went from a drawing, went from a word to a drawing, to another drawing, to then a sculpture, to then a photograph, to then an acrylic painting, so that it, you know, things are sort of reanimated, you know? And I think that's, you know, the new work has been less about that kind of process stuff, but I feel like it's the playfulness of that is like some of the stuff that I'm most drawn to when I look back, is that stuff that's, you know, the rules and sort of watching how my own hands do things and make mistakes and stuff like that.
I mean, it is kind of crazy amount of work, but it seems like...
Yeah. No, it could be really interesting.
You know, the idea of 26, you know, the idea of the sculptures morphing.
Yeah.
You know, how you do it.
And I think it would only work if you finished number one and then worked on number two and then put number one in the closet.
Exactly.
Because when I worked on them in an assembly line, it was just kind of like all the way down. It would have to be that way. But I think it could function for sure. Sure.
Could you go back to the newer work that you showed in the beginning and maybe
top seven or two?
Yeah.
Some of those ideas and evolution?
Yeah, so this was, as I mentioned before, these were images of things that I encountered in Buenos Aires. And my residency there is very short. It was 2 weeks. And I was one of three residents, one from Caracas, Venezuela, and one from Porto Alegre, Brazil. And there was not really a studio situation set up. It was more of a, you know, like you come in, you meet artists, you go to openings, they come to your studio, you go to theirs, you talk, and it's like an exchange. And so I didn't really have a studio to work in. And with 2 weeks, that's not a lot to build anything. So I spent, all my time out walking, just taking photographs. And I had this old film camera that I just love, and it had gotten dusty, and I was like, I'm taking my Leica, I'm taking it to Buenos Aires, and I'm going to shoot pictures, and just kind of like walking through the city, not knowing what you're getting because it's on film, and just not talking to anyone really because my Spanish is terrible, and just sort of being in my head looking around at this city that, you know, I could understand some Spanish, but there's some lost in translation with signage and what certain signifiers in the street meant to you. Or like, there's photographs on the wall there that you can't see, but I kept seeing jugs of water on top of people's cars, different jugs of water, like a 2-liter bottle and an antifreeze coolant. And it would just be sitting on top of like a newish car in the middle of the city. And I took, you know, half dozen photos of these during my time there. And I was asking one of the coordinators, who's Argentine, I asked the Brazilian, he was like, I don't know. The guy from Caracas had no idea. And then I asked Paula, and she was like, oh, the car's for sale. Like, that's what that means. And it was just like, man, that is unbelievable that, like, everyone knows that that's what that means. And I have no idea what that means. And so it was stuff like that that, I don't know, like, there's two yellow and blue pieces in here, and those stand for the Boca Juniors, which is the best or the most famous football club in Argentina. And, you know, not knowing that, you see yellow and blue everywhere and you kind of don't know what it means. And it's on parking meters and it's on everything. So these kind of like these confusing things that I would see, I try to take and replicate some, and some really, really like spot on. For instance, like the lattice that's framed, there was just a black frame on a building that had lattice in it. And so I was like, man, that is absolutely incredible. I don't know if an artist made that or if an insane person made that or if someone's trying to patch a hole, but it's like this weird thing that I just felt needed to be made. So that's sort of how these are. The palette is kind of one of the better examples of not just like robbing someone's crazy idea, but maybe trying to transfer it a bit. I came across a building that had these slats of wood on it. It was like an oak or something, and it had white text painted on it in Spanish, and I couldn't understand the Spanish, but just seeing this building with these slats and the white text, like that's all I wanted out of it. So the palette that I made uses the dummy text that designers use, so like the lorem ipsum, blah, 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 that when you're trying to lay out a design in a magazine, you take this dummy text and just throw it in there as placeholder. So this has the lorem ipsum, blah, blah, blah on it. And so that no one can really understand it, but it gets the aesthetics across the same, you know. There's a caution stripe painted on the outside of a garage that was totally handmade that I thought was really pretty. The piece in the back that's the jugs of bug fluid, they're up against a mirror that's mounted very low on the wall. And as I was walking one day, I walked by a tire shop, and there's a wall of mirrors, and these guys had lined up 14 jugs of antifreeze. And it was just like, I don't know, it was like something you'd see in Unmonumental. You know, it was like this awesome thing that whether they knew it or not, they're aestheticizing their workplace, you know, or like this tool rack, you know, needs to be painted. And maybe I don't know why it needs to be painted, but I'm not busy right now, so I'm going to paint this. And like not thinking of it as art, but just doing it to change the way that their environment is or whatever, is just still kind of like daily blowing my mind. And so this is kind of like some of that stuff. And then these pieces are kind of newer, and it's the same sort of thing. I laid my sunglasses down on a sheet of paper, and it just looked crazy. And so it was like composed perfectly. And so I wanted to kind of abstract it and make it just out of like what I have laying around. And a lot of these things are wood and leftover pieces of other artworks and things. And, you know, that goes back to just sort of, well, what do I have in the studio? Well, this isn't the right size, but it's pretty close. Like, I can probably make this work, or as a stand-in. The, you know, the little egg thing with the holes in it, have no idea what it is, but I found something similar to that at a store, at a Goodwill store, and I couldn't understand its function, and it didn't hold pencils, and it didn't come apart, and it was just like completely out of context, you know. So these things are all kind of, someone wrote a little review and described this work as like the wood shop in high school, you know, like people kind of making these projects, they don't really know how they go together, and you know, they're kind of dumb, but she said that I was aware of that, so at least that's good. But so yeah, I like that about it, that they're kind of playful and kind of silly, but you know, they're just snapshots of little things laying around. Anybody else? Sure. Thank you. Come see the show at TCU if you're in town. It's up for a long time, so...